A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley. Coming up, it's Wednesday, so it must be PMQ's Unpacked. Patrick McGuire and I pause the action live from the House of Commons as Keir Starmer challenges Boris Johnson over taking the knee, racism, football, and a little bit of Northern Ireland too. So that's coming up. First, it's our columnist panel. It's Wednesday, so it must be Crampon, Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson. Except Alice Thompson is off chasing beavers in Devon. I don't know if that's also what Robert Crampton's doing. So instead, we've got Angela Epstein and Andy Sylvester. So the thing I want to talk about, rather than necessarily having a culture war on the merits of masks, this concept of personal responsibility and where it sort of starts and ends and how even the idea of personal responsibility seems to have become a sort of a battle, and it's completely mad that anyone should have personal responsibility. We can't possibly trust people to do the right thing on coronavirus because one man put a flare up his backside outside Wembley. And that proves that everyone, the entire general public, apart from me, obviously, but the entire general public are morons and they can't be trusted. And we need rules constantly on how to live our lives. What do you think, Angela? Where do we need to be more grown up about this concept of personal responsibility?
You know something, for as long as I can remember, the cliche nanny state has been bandied around for any moment at which the government has seemed to be intruding into our lives, beyond what's deemed acceptable. And yet all bets are off now where it comes to masks. Suddenly we want the government to tell us what to do. Coronavirus loves people. We know that. If you have people, you have a risk of infection. But equally, the vaccine program's been amazingly successful. Deaths, thank God, although every death is a terrible thing, but I think the other day there were six deaths. That's six people who are being mourned deeply, but compared to the stratospheric numbers that were earlier on. And as we know, that the people that are getting the infections largely are not poorly, and we're not seeing a massive rapid increase in hospitalisation. We have to learn to live with this thing. We don't have masks for the flu. If you want to go into a crowded place without a mask, then that's up to you. It would probably be sensible in the early stages of liberty to wear a mask. I think there are certain places where it's obviously going to be absolutely necessary, going into hospitals or any kind of clinical situation. But other than that, I think people have to think about it. Am I double vaxxed? And am I okay to move around? If you want to wear a mask, fantastic. But I think we now have to take bear the responsibility for this and not let the government tell us what to do anymore.
Andy, where were you on this, the concept of personal responsibility?
Well, I've got quite a lot of sympathy for the government on this one, because basically they've had 18 months of people saying, stop setting silly rules and let me use my common sense. And now they've invited people to use their common sense and are now being barracked by many of those same people for not setting out on a sort of itemised basis what they can and can't do. They've made a rod for their own back with stupid rules like you know, the substantial meal and things like that. But I still do have some sympathy with them. I think Shapps was right this morning. Government has basically taken the decision now that they're going to leave this in the hands of the public for a little while. And some people might call it abdicating responsibility. Some people might say it's returning to normal life. But I think there's been some sort of weird fundamental shift in what we expect of government over the last 18 months, be it on the economy or on healthcare or on a whole number of other topics, where we're sort of assuming that they're in charge. You know, quite fundamental shifts in the way that, for instance, the economy works, in the sense that if a company is struggling, the furlough scheme turns up and saves somebody. I'm not saying those are bad things, but just philosophically and fundamentally, there has been a shift towards government stepping in to prevent bad things happening. So now we've got to a situation where government's saying, well, actually, bad things might happen, but, you know, it's kind of up to you to sort of protect yourself and protect the people around you and don't be a plonker. And we almost can't deal with being given that responsibility again. It's like we've become sort of kids on a school trip. You know, when you see adults on a corporate away day, you know, perfectly functional, normal adults who are just waiting to be told by the event manager where to go at 5 p.m. And if they're not told at 5 p.m., they become four-year-olds who are just completely without scope or planning. It's almost like we've reverted to that.
I feel like you've got a very specific away day that you've been to there, Andy, in mind when you're talking about that. I mean, Andrew, there were sort of two different schools of thought. On the one hand, we don't go around, you know, the government does go around telling us all the time, you know, how to do everything, you know, how correct ways to cross the road and all that sort of thing. And then somebody else makes the point, well, why we've got a smoking ban because it was agreed that smoking was dangerous and harmful for health. They didn't say, everyone just use your common sense on smoking. Decide whether or not you've got to smoke in a, is it a busy train or a quiet train? So there's a little bit of that going on as well. And I suppose the reason the smoking analogy is better than some of the terrible analogies that people have been shouting at me on Twitter is that it is part about what you're doing and the harm. It's not just about personal harm, is it? It's the harm to others. And it's a question of personal responsibility, but also sort of collective social responsibility too.
Yeah, I mean, oh, sorry. I mean, in terms of smoking, the problem with the difficulty with the smoking analogy is I'd much rather know what you're being battered on Twitter about though, Matt.
I'll tell you. So I, this morning, and I sort of did this thing. I thought, I don't know what, I'm going to tweet about this coronavirus. It seems probably. And I literally and then immediately regretted it. So I've stopped. I said, the thing I find odd about the mask debate, careful how you say that, is people talking as if right now they're working a treat, and if we throw them off, we'll suddenly see a spike in cases. The spike in cases is already happening. Maybe we should talk about why and if it matters instead of having another culture war about masks. That was the point I was making. And obviously, what's
Well, I think that's a very fair point. You're a sensible fellow, Matt. I mean, the thing is, the difficulty...
Twitter doesn't seem to think so, but that's a sort of separate
thing. Twitter. Hello, Twitter. It's full of armchair warriors sitting in their back rooms. If you met them in the street, they'd be like a rat up a drainpipe. I wouldn't agree about those people. I'm absolutely convinced of it, you know? So, in fact, because it has happened to me once or twice, and I say, oh, yes, you know, you, and it's kind of, oh, got to go, my mother-in-law's coming for tea, bye.
You've met somebody who's been rude on Twitter, you've met them in real life.
Yes, I have, and it was quite a highly placed, shall I out him? It was a QC, actually.
Wow.
He said something very rude about my journalism, which he's entitled to do, but he inferred that something was factually inaccurate when it wasn't, which was more, we were straying into personal kind of attack. And when I actually bumped into him, I said, hang on, you're the person, how dare you? And he was with his wife. He said, we have to go. And he shot off.
Wow.
So there you go. He just made some very, very personal remark and, you know, call these people to account. Anyway, that aside, we're all big boys and girls now. The smoking analogy is difficult because obviously if somebody's blowing plumes of smoke in your face, there's probably a very direct cause and effect issue in terms of what it's going to do to your cardiovascular and respiratory health. And I do take the point about masks, but But we are broadly vaccinated now. And the whole point of the vaccination program was to help us get out of this situation. I'm not saying don't wear a mask. There are probably times when maybe there should be some kind of mandatory issue over masks, perhaps on public transport, on the tube, for example, in London or here in Manchester, you know, on the metro or wherever you live. Hospitals, definitely. But does that have to, it's not a zero-sum game anymore. So if you are sitting in a nice, airy kind of office space with lots of open windows, it's mad to think that it's compulsory to wear masks. So I do think that personal responsibility largely has to come down to us.
It's interesting. Well, we were going to touch on the foreign aid vote. We talked a lot about that yesterday. But there was another vote last night where MPs approved compulsory vaccinations for care home staff in England. But quite a lot of Conservatives, particularly on sort of libertarian wing, where they were sort of anti it. And again, this sort of goes to the heart of this whole question, doesn't it, Andy? Is that you want to say it should be up to everyone to get a vaccine, to want to do that voluntarily, personal responsibility, individual liberty. And yet the Commons has had to vote to try and get people who work in social care to make sure they get the vaccine.
But I think that's it, isn't it? Because there are elements of our political class, probably more so than the general public, who look at every issue through a certain prism, in this case, libertarianism. I'm quite a big fan of libertarianism, as it goes. But in the middle of a global pandemic, you have to drop some of those principles and just look at things on a case-by-case basis. And we know what happened to care homes. We know the people that are in care homes. And we know that there are a number of people still working in care homes who haven't had a vaccine. Now, you can talk about personal responsibility and wanting to make your own choices about having a stick in your arm, putting something that you don't really understand and probably can't pronounce. But you're in a care home with the most vulnerable people in society, where a lot of people died, and nobody's making you work in a care home. So I think we need to kind of get away from this sort of principle-first approach in our politics, which seems to be all the rage in the culture wars, and actually just look at things on a pragmatic basis, because I would imagine that 99% of people, especially people who have got elderly relatives in care homes, would think that's a markedly sensible approach.
Would you go as far as doing it in the NHS as well?
I think there's a perfectly rational case for that. And I think, again, there's a case-by-case basis. If you're working in the NHS 111 helpline and you're working from home all year, then probably not. But if you're working in any sort of clinical setting or behind a reception in a place where you've got lots of 50 plus types wandering in, then yeah, I think it makes perfect sense.
We'll see if that happens. I mean, the logical conclusion of the vote last night is that it should apply to the NHS as well. One other thing I want to talk to you about, Angela, this survey saying that more and more people are using dating apps just to find friends. Some dating apps now are adding just a friendship section just so that people can meet other people, because it's been so difficult to meet, presumably because it's quite difficult, you don't meet friends of friends and work colleagues and all that sort of thing. Have you found yourself doing that, Angela?
Well, not personally, because thankfully I have, I'm at home. Thank God I've got family. I live in quite a sort of close-knit community, so you can walk down the road and people can go, hey, have you put on weight? And all that kind of thing. And it's very difficult to forge the same kind. I mean, obviously, Matt, we're very, very close now, forged over the internet. And there is always a Friday night dinner at my house, should you be in my neck of the woods.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I do a mean chicken soup. But the point is that friendship is very much, look, friendship historically has been about human interaction. People have pen pals, of course. People have met across the Gulf of Space through the internet. One of my children lives abroad, so our whole conversations at the moment are like this. But that's usually starting from a point of knowledge. When you're starting somewhere fresh, it's very difficult to kind of build a friendship without at least seeing the person and having some interaction with them or having a common denominator. I think it's a very, without wishing to sound, it's not patronising, it's a genuine source of sorrow that we've reached a situation that people have to kind of go through some kind of formulaic algorithmic approach to finding friendships, when it should be, you know, hey, you know, how are you? I met you at the coffee machine kind of thing. And that's why this idea of holding back on encouraging people to go back to work is so devastating, especially for young people, people that live alone or people that feel socially isolated, because that's a great place where people have friendships. And maybe over the past year, people have felt those workplace friendships have slipped away. And now they're looking for other things to do that. Can I just tell you very quickly, I run a podcast called Jewish Mother Me, which wonders whether people of any age, religion, domestic setting, gender could do with a bit of Jewish mother in their life. And one of the episodes we talk about is friendships and matchmaking and, you know, how we can all help people connect with each other just for the pure love of friendship, not because you're looking to find someone to marry. So I do understand it very, very much, but it is a great shame that if the pandemic stops people from some really sort of, you know, having that face-to-face interaction.
Annie Sylvester from City AM then, and journalist Angela Epstein, thanks so much for joining us here on the podcast. Right, up next, it's PMQ's Unpacked.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Redbox Podcast. Now it's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio, unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley.
And Patrick Maguire. So Patrick Maguire is here for PMQs Unpacked. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very well. Yeah, I'm good. I usually at this point we talk about, you know, my liver having turned into pate or you know, me going to Wembley later, but alas, that's over.
Back to life, back to reality, back to when you, without the distraction of football at Wembley, you can just concentrate on the upcoming excitement of Ian Blackford's question at PMQs, which, as I know, is one of your highlights of the week. It's a funny sort of situation, this, isn't it? What do you think? It feels like there's a wobble in the sort of Tory position. I mean, actually, not in the polls at all. They're still, you know, 10, 12 points ahead. But just, you know, there's the racism row, there's foreign aid, there's masks. There's quite a lot that that Keir Starmer could go at today to sort of just needle Boris Johnson.
Yeah, he could. There are six issues. I'm not going to name all six, and I hope he doesn't do this because we'll be very confused by the end of the session. But as you say, there are so many fronts on which the government is vulnerable that he could genuinely ask six different questions on six entirely different topics today. As you say, aid, social media regulation is a big one that Labour are plugging away at. You have the troubles prosecutions round this morning, which is potentially very painful for the government and which Labour have been very active on. Yeah, there's no shortage of stuff. And also the masks is very much in keeping with Keir Starmer's line of attack recently. So he has an embarrassment of riches for once, actually.
And given your commitment, shall we say, to lunching and wining and dining Labour insiders...
I'm actually drinking water.
What's the mood around Keir Starmer? Two or three weeks ago, it looked a bit dicey. He hung on in Batley and Spen. Things have sort of slightly improved. Is the operation improving?
Yeah, as we've said over the past 2 weeks, there is definitely a feeling internally that the opposition is feeling much sharper, that it's on the pitch in a way that wasn't necessarily before, and that it is good at picking issues and sticking to them. Now, in that vein, given that last week Keir Starmer was talking about three things, ventilation, masks and proper payment, financial compensation for self-isolation, it wouldn't surprise me if he kept plugging away on the COVID front, talking about the many, many mixed messages from transport companies, the government, and indeed Grant Shapps on the round this morning saying, oh, it's completely consistent with government policy that you still have to wear a mask on the tube. All very confusing.
Even when last week we had ministers talking about how quickly they're going to put their masks in the bin. Well, let us know what you think about PMQs today. You can text us 87222, start your message with the word Times. Tweet us at Times Radio. What do you make of Keir Starmer's questions and whether or not Boris Johnson gave anything approximating an answer? 87222, start your message with the word Times. You can tweet me at Times Radio as we prepare to go live to the House of Commons for the penultimate one, actually. Well, we've only got one more left next week, haven't we?
Yeah, Lindsay Hall puts on a video next week. Everyone wears their own clothes.
Wears your own clothes, bring in Buckaroo. I quite like the idea of that. Lindsay Hall does have, I think somebody wants to talk, I think somebody wrote in a column or email me once. Oh, no, do you know what? I think it was Sarah Cox. Sarah Cox once tweeted that Lindsay Hall had the air of a sort of CDT teacher from school who, you know...
Don't touch the lathe. I told you, don't touch the lid.
Yeah, he'd be all jokes and laughter, but he'd really lose his rag if you started mucking about with the tools. Anyway, let's go now live to the House of Commons. Here is Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I start by thanking the England football team for everything they've given this country over the last 6 weeks? I'm so proud of this young, diverse and humble team and everything that it represents. Mr. Speaker, they're the very best of modern Britain. Everything that I know this country can be. Does the Prime Minister think that it was wrong to criticise the England team's decision to oppose racism by taking the knee as gesture politics?
I agree very much with what the Right Honourable Gentleman said about the England team. And I repeat, I want to thank each and every one of them for what they did, their incredible campaign they ran in the Euro 2020 championships. And they do represent the very best of our country. And I repeat that I utterly condemn and abhor the racist outpourings that we saw on Sunday night. And so what we're doing is today taking practical steps to ensure that the football banning order regime is changed, so that if you are guilty, Mr. Speaker, of racist abuse online of footballers, then you will not be going to the match. No ifs, no buts, no exemptions, and no excuses.
No ifs, no buts. The trouble is when Boris Johnson says no ifs, no buts, is no ifs, no buts, we're leaving on October the 31st, immediately springs to mind. So probably not the most cast iron of promises. Clearly, Keir Starmer has decided that this is the issue that the country is most aware of. They can see there's value in keeping it going. And actually, you know, he's parking himself right in the news agenda.
Yes, exactly. And given that Boris Johnson, for much of the Euros, seemed to be, you know, riding the zeitgeist to the top of the polls, I think this is, we're seeing the flip side of this with Keir Starmer. Now, obviously, what we'll probably get to in the next question or the question after that is, as you say, there's always a but with Boris Johnson, but also Labour are going to point out that he's not a credible messenger on this stuff, as Gary Neville said so memorably on the telly the other morning, rattling through the Prime Minister's back catalogue. I think it'll be you haven't acted on online abuse, and also why don't you have a look in the mirror of you before you talk about racist abuse towards.
And it is interesting. So basically, the government's got itself in this situation. At the start of the tournament, the public opinion or the national conversation wasn't as clear cut. Some people were genuinely conflicted about the taking of the knee and politics and sport and all that. By the end of the tournament, they're all heroes, even though they didn't win. And you've got this situation where Priti Patel, in particular, put herself so at odds and said it was okay to boo the players for what was just gesture politics.
Yeah, and I remember being in the in the lobby briefing where the Prime Minister's spokesman repeatedly declined to condemn the fans who had booed taking the knee, and particularly given the ugly scenes at Wembley on Sunday at the outside of the ground as well. There is a very palpable feeling that the government called this one completely wrong and is on the side of the debate for which the bulk of the public has no sympathy. And it's very interesting watching the Prime Minister try and backpedal now, and it'll be equally interesting to see whether Keir Starmer can make the most of that.
Well, let's go back to the House of Commons. This is Keir Starmer's second question.
Starmer. Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry, that just won't wash. And it rings hollow. On the 7th... Remind the Prime Minister and the House, on the 7th of June, the Prime Minister's spokesperson said this. On taking the knee, specifically, the Prime Minister is more focused on actions rather than gestures. on the 14th of June, on the 14th of June, the Home Secretary said, I just don't support people participating in that type of gesture politics. The Conservative MP for Bassetlaw called it a ridiculous, empty gesture. So there's no point of pretending that these things weren't said. The England footballer, Tyrone Mings, said that Labour Party member I hear shouted out. Is that really the response? Is that it? Tyrone Mings said, and the House might want to listen, he said this, labelling anti-racism messages as gesture politics served to stoke the fire of racism and hatred. Prime Minister, they're powerful words from someone who has himself been subjected to racist abuse. He's right, isn't he?
Mr. Speaker, I want to reiterate our total support for our fantastic England team, and I support them in the way that they show solidarity with their friends who face racism, Mr. Speaker. But when he talks about the Home Secretary, let me just remind him that my right honourable friend, the Home Secretary, has faced racism and prejudice all her career of a kind that he can never imagine, and she has taken practical steps to get black and minority officers into the police in record numbers. In fact, Speaker, I am...
Sorry to interrupt you. I want to hear the Prime Minister. If his own side don't want to hear him, I'm sure the tea room will accommodate them. It's very important to listen to what the Prime Minister's got to say. Have you finished, Prime Minister? Are you OK? Yeah. Keir Starmer.
Somebody's put their tie in the vice again.
It's been messing about with the... Somebody trying to touch the lathe. It's sort of interesting. I'm not sure we're getting very far on this. It's not sort of going anywhere. It's an interesting question that Paul has just sent in. Is Keir Starmer echoing the zeitgeist of the nation or playing the culture wars? Ridiculing engagement in the culture wars is still meddling in the culture wars. And I suppose that's essentially what Keir Starmer's doing, isn't it? By highlighting the inconsistencies of the Conservative side, he's also entering into this war.
Yes, but also, I mean, if we zoom out a little bit from our cutting edge analysis of the parliamentary cut and thrust and think 10 hours in the future where, you're sitting in Fleet with your cup of Ovaltine watching the 10 o'clock news, and there is definitely an item near the top of the programme on abuse of footballers on social media and the latest day's developments, and there'll be clips of Keir Starmer taking the Prime Minister to task, regardless of whether we're getting particularly illuminating answers from the Prime Minister here, or whether it's consistent with Labour's positions to date on this issue. Because bear in mind, Keir Starmer was pretty slow at the start of the tournament to full-throatedly endorse taking the knee for obvious reasons. Labour will be on telly on the right side, in the view of most of the public, of this debate. So I think, regardless, it's a pretty prudent approach to PMQs.
And it's interesting, so far, Keir Starmer's quoted, well, the briefing, the exact lobby briefing that you were discussing.
There you go.
On the 7th of June, Priti Patel talking about gesture politics on the 14th of June. He also referred to the member for Bassetlaw, that's Brendan Clark-Smith, who's the Tory MP in Bassetlaw. What he hasn't done yet, and maybe this is where he's going next, is because there are lots of Tory MPs who are squirming a bit. You know, it's not that everyone thinks this is a good place to be. And most recently, we've seen Steve Baker, well, started off privately in WhatsApp groups and is now out on the airwaves doing it, saying that Conservative MPs must change their attitudes towards people taking the knee. He's urged his fellow Conservative MPs to get alongside those players who are taking the knee. It's a wake-up call to the Conservative Party of just how powerful our words are when we navigate these issues. And so it'd be interesting to see if Keir Starmer sort of, because it's a real skill if you can achieve that at PMQs to sort of create a wedge between the Prime Minister
exactly.
and the MPs who are there. So let's go back to the comments.
Mr. Speaker, let me be clear. I totally condemn all racism, including that directed at the Home Secretary. But she's got this wrong. The whole country knows it. His own MPs know it. In the last few days, everybody has seen England's black players have been the targets of disgusting racist abuse following Sunday's match. Disgusting. And this is really simple, Mr. Speaker. Either the Prime Minister is with the England players in their stand against racism, or he can defend his own record, those of his ministers and some of his MPs. But he can't have it both ways. So can he tell the House, does he now regret failing to condemn those who booed England players for standing up to racism, yes or no?
Mr. Speaker, we made it absolutely clear that no one should boo the England team. And Mr. Speaker, what we're doing now is following the racist abuse that our players sadly suffered on Sunday night and thereafter, we're taking practical action. So in addition to changing the football banning order regime, last night I met representatives of Facebook, of Twitter, of TikTok, of Snapchat, of Instagram, and I made it absolutely clear to them that we will legislate to address this problem, Mr. Speaker, in the Online Harms Bill, and unless they get hate and racism off their platforms, they will face fines amounting to 10% of their global revenues. And we all know, Mr. Speaker, that they have the technology to do it.
Let's just jump in there. I mean, when he said the government condemned the booing, I mean that's just factually not right.
Yeah.
Priti Patel was asked whether England fans had a right to boo England's national team, and she said, "That's a choice for them, quite frankly. I've not gone to a football match to even contemplate that." I mean, that's not a condemnation.
And given repeated opportunities to condemn the booers, asked if they condone the booers, the Prime Minister's spokesman declined to do both. So, yeah, at no point did Boris Johnson come out and say, we should all get behind the team taking the knee. That's nonsense.
And that final point that Boris Johnson was just making there about how social media companies will be could be fined up to 10% of their global turnover. We should make clear that's not new. That's not a thing which has come along as a new get tough message.
And also that legislation has been in the pipeline for a very, very long time, at least a year.
Yeah, it's the Online Safety Bill. Social media companies and search engines will be forced to remove. This was the story at the time when it was, I think it was back in May when it was sort of finally unveiled. This was talking about removing scams from their websites or face fines. The legislation will make tech companies legally responsible for the online safety of their users. Ofcom will become the regulator of the sector and will be able to impose fines of £18 million or 10% of a firm's global turnover if they fail to show a duty of care to users. It's not specifically about the issues that we've been looking at in the past few days. Well, let's go back to the comments. Question four from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, the Online Harms Bill has been promised for 3 years. I'm not sure a 15-minute chat at a garden party moves things forward that significantly. But I want to take the Prime Minister up on what he said about being absolutely clear, because here I have the headline, Mr. Speaker, Boris Johnson refuses to condemn fans booing England taking the knee. That's the story, that's the headline, June the 6th. Boris Johnson refuses to condemn fans booing England taking the knee. That's absolutely clear. It's not quite what the Prime Minister is implying today. It goes on to quote the Prime Minister's spokesperson, saying that the Prime Minister fully respects the rights of those who choose to make their feelings known. Yeah. This is about booing. Yeah. Fully respects their rights. And the Home Secretary said that booing was a choice for them, quite frankly. So no condemnation there, no absolute clarity there, Mr. Speaker. When senior government ministers and Conservative MPs defend the booing of an anti-racist message, who do they think they're defending, Prime Minister, and why are they defending it?
Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, nobody defends booing of the England side. Nobody defends booing of the England side. And if he continues to attack the Home Secretary...
I want to hear the Prime Minister. I want to know the answer, and I expect the opposition to listen to the answer. Prime Minister.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. We love and admire the England side and what they did. They represent the best of our country. Nobody defends booing the England side, Mr. Speaker, but what the Home Secretary has been trying to do all her life is not just to fight racism, but to take practical steps to advance the cause of black and minority ethnic groups, which she has done successfully, notably in the police. And since, Mr. Speaker, he's chucking this kind of thing around, could I ask him now to retract this leaflet produced by the Labour Party during the Batley and Spen by-election, which was condemned by his own MPs as dog-whistle racism, Mr. Speaker.
Right, OK, talking of PMQs. Yeah, so this is PMQs Unpacked, where we pause the action trying to unpack what's going on. Patrick McGuire, Red Box Editor of the Times, is with me. And there's got a lot to unpack there. The garden party that Keir Starmer was referring to, this is an event which I think happened last night with Boris Johnson and some of the tech firms. It was sort of briefed as being he read the right act, but it was a long-planned thing.
It wasn't the Boris Johnson, as you say, summons them for the hairdryer treatment. It was pre-arranged reception.
There was a pre-arranged drinks reception. So there was that. Keir Starmer, I think it was the Guardian he was waving around just for the, people just know that. What's the website? Maybe he's lost his Times login. He can get a subscription at the moment. It's very reasonably priced. Nobody defends booing, says Boris Johnson, but they weren't condemning it either. That's the fundamental point on this, isn't it?
Yes, and several Conservative MPs went as far as to say the England team weren't worthy of the support of British
supporters. Well, Lee Anderson, famously.
Yeah. Lee Anderson, also several others, refusing to... Well, Lee Anderson was the most unfortunate and famous of them all, of course.
He was the poster boy who said he wouldn't watch England at all, but had to admit he was keeping updates on his phone. And then explain the leaflet that Boris Johnson... So you've got Keir Starmer waving around a printout of the Guardian website. Boris Johnson then starts waving around a printout of a Labour leaflet.
Yeah, so in Batley and Spen, obviously one of the main issues, and an issue that is really forcing Labour into quite painful contortions in parts of the country where there are either large British Indian or British Pakistani communities, is Kashmir. And obviously that's a disagreement between India and Pakistan, and each voters in each community, in the eyes of the Labour Party, want Labour to take a certain position on that bilateral dispute between India and Kashmir. Labour has been pulled all over the place in that, but in Batley distributed a leaflet that showed Boris Johnson with Narendra Modi and included lots of bullet points talking about how he was unsound on the issues that mattered to basically British Pakistani voters. And I think Boris Johnson's point is Labour can't take the moral high ground on racism if it is going to tailor its messages to voters of certain ethnicities along sectarian lines. Now, far be it from me to suggest that not everybody cares about the Batley and Spen by-election nearly a month out from afterwards, and with a Euros tournament in between that has captured the public imagination, I'm not terribly sure that one's going to cut through.
Yeah, I think on the whole, if the public have a view on anything, it's probably the football rather than the Batley and Spen leaflet. Right, let's go out to the comments. Question 5 from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister isn't kidding anyone in this House. He's not kidding the public, and he's not even kidding his own MPs. Let me quote the Conservative MP for Plymouth Moor View. Conservative MP, the painful truth, says the Conservative MP for Plymouth Moor View, is that Tyrone Mings is completely right. I am very uncomfortable, he says, with the position we Conservatives are needlessly forcing ourselves into. So, Prime Minister, behind you, they don't believe you, and neither do we. Mr. Speaker, we can all see what's happened here. The government has been trying to stoke a culture war, and they've realised they're on the wrong side. And now they hope that nobody's noticed. Why else would a Conservative MP boast that he's not watching his own team? Why else would another Conservative MP say that Marcus Rashford spends too much time playing politics when he's actually trying to feed children that the government won't?
Natalie Elphick this week.
And why will the Prime Minister refuse time and time again, even now, to condemn those who boo our players for standing up against racism? Mr. Speaker, what is it that this England team symbolises that this Conservative Party is so afraid of?
Mr. Speaker, I think the House will judge for themselves the quality of the question that the Right Honourable Gentleman has just put. I think the whole House is united, including our distinguished members from Scotland, by the way, Mr. Speaker, in admiration of the England team and of every single member of that squad and what they did. And we stick up for them, Mr. Speaker. And what we're doing is taking practical steps to fight racism, changing the football banning order regime, fining the online companies, And by the way, we will use more legislation if we have to, just as we use the threat of legislation, Mr. Speaker, to stop the European Super League. And we will get on. We will get on with delivering for the people of this country. We will get on with vaccinating the people of this country while they continue to vacillate. We will continue to immunise the people of this country while they improvise and dart around. And, Mr. Speaker, I don't want to engage in a political culture war of any kind. I want to get on with delivering for the people of this country. He simply wants to get on with dithering.
There we are. Vaccinate, vacillate, immunise, all the greatest hits. The biggest takeaway from that, Patrick Maguire, is I don't want to engage in a political culture war of any kind.
Shocked to find that gambling is going on in here. Yes. Although I think that is indicative of the way the mood in this country, or perhaps, as you said before, to use your phrasing before, a much more clear-cut public consensus on this issue has emerged. It wasn't, there was always a majority in favour of the England team taking a knee. But over time, if you look at the polling, actually it is much closer to a supermajority than it once was. And I think that the Prime Minister's answer there, one, actually reflects his self regard as a guy who he wants to be a Prime Minister who gets things done, spades in the ground, etc., etc., and will feel vulnerable to the idea that he is a man who is all hot air. And I think the second thing is actually now, Labour has found a line on the culture wars, which is effectively that they're a bit ridiculous. Look at the petition they launched about Lee Anderson, that Tory MP who refused to watch the games on Friday. People close to Keir Starmer were telling me, actually, this is about owning the issues that the Tories think they own and exposing them as basically a little bit uncool, out of touch.
Last week, the Labour Party launched a petition urging Lee Anderson to carry on not watching the football.
And they said, well, he was born in 1967. Actually, it's finally clear. Lee Anderson watching the games for his entire life is what's kept England from a major final, so please stop watching.
But it was also a very clever way of Labour harvesting a lot of email addresses.
Exactly
right. OK, well, apparently Boris Johnson doesn't want a culture war. Let's find out if Keir Starmer continues it anyway.
Keir Starmer!
He doesn't want to engage in a culture war on point scoring. Give me a break. Football, footballs, footballs. Football's a game. Racism isn't, Prime Minister. That's why many of us have been involved in the charity Show Racism the Red Card for years. But far from giving racism the red card, the Prime Minister gave it the green light. And I'll tell you the worst kind of gesture politics, Mr. Speaker, putting an England shirt on over a shirt and tie whilst not condemning those booing is the worst kind of gesture. Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the Prime Minister, finally, about the reported amnesty for crimes committed during the Troubles in Northern Ireland. I worked in Northern Ireland for 6 years with the Policing Board and the police. I've also prosecuted terrorists as the Director of Public Prosecutions, so I know how difficult and how sensitive this is. But a blanket amnesty, including for terrorists, is plain wrong. I was in Northern Ireland last week, and it's absolutely clear that the government's amnesty is not supported by the political parties in Northern Ireland, and it's not supported by victims' groups. Last Thursday, I spoke to victims of terrorism at the Wave Trauma Centre in North Belfast. Mr. Speaker, they haven't even been properly consulted on this proposal. If things are to move forward in Northern Ireland, any discussion has to start with the victims. Politicians in London can't simply draw a line under terrorism and other crimes and then force it on those most affected. The Prime Minister looks up, so let him look up and let him hear. Because I want to quote Julie Hambleton, Prime Minister. Her sister Maxine was among the 21 people killed by the IRA in the Birmingham pub bombings. So that's Julie Hambleton, Prime Minister. She says, tell me, Prime Minister, if one of your loved ones was blown up beyond recognition, where you were only able to identify your son or daughter by their fingernails, would you be so quick to grant their murderers an amnesty and propose such obscene legislation? What does the Prime Minister have to say to Julie, and she's listening, and other victims like her?
Mr. Speaker, I think that the Her House will acknowledge the suffering of victims like Julian there and their families. And, of course, nothing I say or can do now can in any way mitigate her loss, and that is clear. But it is also true that the people of Northern Ireland must, if we possibly can allow them to, they must move forwards now. And he will know that the proposals that are being brought forward, and the House will hear about them in more detail later on from my right honourable friend, the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, the proposals that are being brought forward are measured, they are balanced, and they have a wide degree of support, I may say, from former Labour Prime Ministers and former Labour leaders, who I think are of considerable more distinction, I may say, than the right honourable gentleman opposite. And he will recall that it was under that Labour administration that many terrorists were unfortunately given effectively an amnesty, and they were allowed to escape the full consequences of their crimes, as he knows very well. And that is the reality, whilst the sad fact remains that, and this is of course no consolation to people like Julie, but the sad fact remains that there are many members of the armed services who continue to face the threat of vexatious prosecutions well into their 70s and 80s and later. And we are finally, Mr. Speaker, bringing forward a solution to this problem, to enable the province of Northern Ireland to draw a line under the Troubles, to enable the people of Northern Ireland to move forward. And I think someone with greater statesmanship and clarity of vision would have seen that, Mr. Speaker, and given these proposals a fair wind.
There we are, that's Boris Johnson reacting there too. But Keir Starmer doing five questions on the culture wars and, well, the taking the knee and racism in football. And then one last question on this Northern Ireland, which actually he could have done six on, couldn't he, Patrick?
He could have. But I think, actually, that one question made the point very powerfully.
He's got himself probably in the news on England and England.
Exactly. On the television behind you at one point, I noticed the Troubles prosecutions is very high on the news agenda. So he will be, from a purely like mechanics of news perspective, he's got a couple of bites of the cherry. And I think I actually got a text from, not to, you know, brag about my connections live on national radio, from someone close to Keir Starmer. They're asking me what I thought of that question, with the line, you know, we're going after them big time on this. Because think about it, Labour in the 2019 election were always attacked by Boris Johnson for Jeremy Corbyn's sympathy for the IRA, and now they're offering terrorists of all persuasions in Northern Ireland a blanket amnesty. And we actually ran that letter he mentioned from the sister of one of the Birmingham pub bombing victims in Redbox this morning. It's very powerful. And it's clear Boris Johnson doesn't really have an answer. And hearing him try and justify it on the grounds that, you know, the veterans were being dragged through the courts, actually, if you turn it on its head and lead with the RA stuff, which the government is deliberately playing down. There was a bit of it in the papers this morning, but it's very much, for the papers that have campaigned on this, it's a paragraph 12 detail and not the top line of the story. But clearly, when the emphasis has changed, it's very, very uncomfortable. And that line about soldiers is much less convincing.
That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. We bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts from?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.